Life Audio.
Welcome to Truth Tribe with Doug Grotheis. This is where we seek the truth about what matters most through reason and evidence. I am professor of philosophy at Denver Seminary, where I've served for 30 years. If you'd like to know more about Denver Seminary, go to denverseminary.edu. We offer a master's degree in Christian apologetics. If you'd like to know more about me, please go to my webpage, douglasgrotheis.com. We're going to be addressing a very serious subject today, one I've been speaking about for about 35 years, and that is the subject of abortion. I'm against abortion for biblical and logical reasons, and I am pro-life for biblical and logical reasons.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
I'd like to begin by reading something that I read at the state capitol of Colorado in Denver on March 10th, 2022. There was a bill before the state Congress there called Reproductive Health Equity Act. This will just take a few minutes to read, and then I'm going to go into some more detail about a biblical and logical argument against abortion and for the intrinsic and the absolute value of unborn human life. Madam Chairwoman, members of the committee, my name is Douglas Grotheis. I am professor of philosophy at Denver Seminary, but I speak in my own capacity. I oppose this bill because of the principle upon which it rests and because of its implications for the treatment of human beings. This bill states that a fertilized egg, embryo, or fetus does not have independent or derivative rights under the laws of the state. Thus, this bill forbids any restriction on abortion. It is a case of pro-abortion absolutism and extremism, which is based on the denial of any moral value to the unborn. Under this bill, an endangered animal species has more rights than an unborn human being. But what is a fetus? To simplify, I will use fetus to cover every stage of pregnancy. 1. A fetus, from conception, is a living being, not a potential life. Rather, a fetus is a life with potential. If it were not alive, no abortion could be possible to end its life. Abortion ends a life. 2. The fetus is a human being, not a potential human. What else could it be? A cow, a rabbit, an insect? Rather, the fetus is a living human being with potential. Abortion ends a human life. If humanity has any objective moral worth, then it has objective moral worth from conception. At conception, the unborn possesses a unique genetic code, which is the blueprint for human development. Everyone here has the same genetic code that he or she had at conception. We are all former fetuses, and we should remember our roots. Therefore, the unborn ought to be protected legally. The fetus has the human right not to be killed. This right overwhelms any but the most severe reason for killing the fetus, such as the protection of the life of the mother. The burden of proof is on the life taker. The benefit of doubt should be given to the developing human being. This bill deems the fetus to be mere stuff, mere meat, which can be used however desired. If a fetus survives an abortion, he or she can be left to gasp for breath and left to die, or be actively killed. Or the fetus can be used for anything desired, because according to this bill, the fetus has no rights whatsoever. Eagle's eggs have more rights. This view of the unborn is untrue, irrational, inhumane, and unjust. It is also un-American, since the Declaration of Independence states that all men are created equal and that they have certain unalienable rights, which includes the right to life. This bill removes this essential right in the name of equity. Real equity would recognize that all human beings, born and unborn, possess the right not to be murdered. I ask you to vote no on this bill. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Now, we only had, I think, 2 minutes each to read these statements. I slowed down a little bit for this recording. Sadly, this bill passed. All the Colorado Democrats voted for it. All the Colorado Republicans voted against it. The point of the bill was to make Colorado an abortion destination state because they were worried that if states had restrictive laws against abortion after Roe v. Wade was overturned, that women could not get abortions in those states, so they would have to go to other states. So even though Colorado had an extremely liberal, extremely pro-abortion, had those kind of laws on the books, they wanted to make it absolutely clear. What I'd like to do is give you a biblical argument against abortion in four, the unique and incomparable value of the unborn human being, and then also give you a logically based argument. The second argument is not unbiblical, but I simply want to make an argument that will appeal to Christians first, and secondly, an argument that I hope would appeal to anyone. First, for the biblically based argument, the fetus is a person made in God's image. Genesis 1:27, Psalm 139:13 through 16, Job 3:3, and other passages. If you look at Luke chapter 1 and chapter 2, in chapter 1, verses 41 and 44, the Greek word brephos is used to describe the unborn. And in Luke 2:12 and 16, the Greek word brephos is used to describe an infant. They're used interchangeably. The Bible does not make a moral distinction between unborn and born human beings with respect to their intrinsic and their objective value. So the first premise is the fetus is a person made in God's image. Second, murder is unjustly killing a person and is thus sinful. Exodus 20, verse 13, of course. You shall not murder. Third premise, abortion is, all things being equal, the unjust killing of a person. The only exception I can see is when the life of the mother is directly endangered by the pregnancy and can only be protected by an abortion. In this case, you employ what is called the doctrine of double effect. You're really not wanting to kill the unborn child. You're wanting to save the mother. And if the only way to save the mother is to kill the unborn child, that is the effect of saving the mother. Cases like this are extremely rare, and a good physician will always try to save the lives of both of his patients, mother and child. So let's get to some conclusions. The fourth statement, therefore, A, abortion is morally wrong and sinful before God. 5, therefore, B, social policies and laws should discourage abortion and encourage childbearing. 6, therefore, C, abortion should be illegal and stigmatized socially. So the case is very straightforward. There is a question about a passage in Exodus 21, 22 through 25. I won't go into that. It's an example of case law where if people are fighting and someone hits a pregnant woman and she gives birth prematurely, the issue is, what is the penalty to be enacted? And there is a dispute as to how to translate that. Does it mean she gives birth prematurely to a live baby, or does she have a miscarriage? I'm not going to go into this, but the most likely translation is premature live birth, which would show that the penalty is the same for both, whether or not the child is hurt or if the mother was hurt. I don't need to go into the details about this. Some people use it, try to use it, to say, well, the penalty for a miscarriage is much less than it would be if a woman was killed, therefore abortion is not that bad. Well, that doesn't follow at all, because even if it is a lesser penalty for a miscarriage, that doesn't mean somehow abortion is fine or that unborn human beings are not worthy of protection and respect. But let me go on to an argument that we can use for people who don't even believe in the Bible. And this concerns the moral nature and status of the fetus.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolfe. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
And I want to ask several questions. First, is the fetus alive? Some people say that a pregnancy just involves potential life. No, it's not potential life, as I said in my statement. It's life with potential. Secondly, is the fetus human? Some people say the fetus is potentially a human. Of course not. The fetus is a human with potential. Now, you might say, is the fetus a person? I'd say, yes, we don't have a potential person. We have a person with potential. Therefore, the fetus is a living human person with potential. Therefore, secondly, the fetus has a right to life greater than other considerations that would lead to his or her abortion. Now, some people might say, well, let's say that the most important category here is personhood, and maybe personhood doesn't obtain until some point in the pregnancy. So before personhood obtains, then abortion is morally justifiable. Well, I think we can make this argument perhaps even without talking about personhood, because philosophers argue about that. You can't really argue at all, based on the biology, about the fact that the fetus is a living human being with potential. But I want to say that personhood kicks in at conception, and you have the potential to develop everything that human beings have as adults from that point. But if the fetus is not a person at conception, when? Implantation? You have a complete genetic code before that, a certain level of brain waves. Why do you want to restrict personhood, which has moral value, to some particular brain waves? Which brain waves? Some want to say sentience, that you don't have personhood until you have the feeling of pain or something else. But again, you can be harmed without feeling harm. If you're aborted, whether you feel it or not, you are certainly harmed. Some people say the fetus is not a person with human rights until viability. But why make weakness the key factor in personhood? Variability varies in time and place and from fetus to fetus. Moreover, we try to take care of born people who are not viable. You see someone on the side of the road, you don't say, oh, that person's not viable, just leave them to die. Or someone gets old and needs care, you don't say, well, they're not viable, so leave them to die. So viability is really an absurd criterion for personhood. What about birth? Personhood somehow kicks in at birth. There's no fundamental change in the nature of the fetus at birth, only location and change of air supply. But let's say you can't decide whether or not the fetus is a person from conception onward. Does it follow then that abortion is justified? No, it doesn't, because you cannot argue against the fact you have a living human being with potential. Those are settled facts. But let's say you're not sure when personhood kicks in. Well, personhood is very significant. So really, if you don't know, you should be conservative. Let me give you an example. Let's say you're going to a shooting range and the person that runs a shooting range says, well, I'd say there's a 95% chance that there are no children playing behind the targets. So go ahead and do your target practice. No, you wouldn't engage in the target practice. Even if there's a 5% chance of killing a human child who's a person, then you don't do it. Or let's say someone's wanting to detonate an old building. And they say, well, we're about 90% sure that those homeless people that were living in the building are gone. We're not 100% sure, but let's go and blow up the building anyway. Of course you don't, because if you blow up the building, you would kill a human being. Even if you don't know whether or not there's a human being, you give the benefit of the doubt and you bear the burden of proof if you're going to kill something that is beyond question a living human being with potential, and I would argue a person as well. Now, what about some basic arguments against my view? Pro-choice, or better, pro-abortion arguments. It is only for a woman to decide since it is her body. Well, there's another body involved, and that's the body of the living human being within her. Second, if abortions are illegal, then women will have illegal abortions and those could be dangerous and women could die. Well, maybe so, but that's no basis for deciding what should be legal and illegal. If people break laws, it may jeopardize them or it may not. The issue is the moral question at hand, and that's what we have addressed. Three, society should not force women to bring unwanted children into the world. Well, unwanted children, many pregnancies that are unplanned produce children that people want, whether or not that's the mother. Children can be adopted. Moreover, simply because they're unwanted doesn't mean they have no objective moral value or that they can be aborted. Others might say that handicaps in fetuses justify abortion, particularly something like Down syndrome. And there you have to go back to the original argument. If you have a living human being with potential, and I'd say a person, then a handicapped living human being who is a person with potential still has the objective right not to be killed. And people with handicaps, whether it's Down syndrome or anything else, can have meaningful lives. But whether they have meaningful lives or not, they have an objective moral standing in the world that should not be violated. Now, what about pregnancies that occur because of rape or incest? And I think most incest is probably a form of rape. This supposedly justifies abortion. No, it doesn't. You've got to go back to the objective moral status of the fetus. If you have a human being with the right not to be murdered, then how that human being came into existence is irrelevant. Rape is horrible. Incest is horrible. But killing the result of that rape or incest does not solve anything. Two wrongs do not make a right. And then some people say, well, if we make abortion illegal, poor women will not be able to get abortions and rich ones will. Maybe so. So what? That's irrelevant. The issue is the objective moral standing of the living human person, not who is going to be able to get abortions and who is not going to be able to get abortions. Another point, and we often hear this now, is that abortion is necessary for women's rights. Now, for a full argument on this, please refer to Rebecca Merrill Grotheis's essay in Women Caught in the Conflict, pages 75 through 87, where she deals with this. Historically, the 19th century U.S. feminists opposed abortion. They believed that the unborn had the right to live and that it was really part of male oppression of women, for women to have abortions, because men could conceive, could impregnate women, and then say, well, I don't want to raise the child, just get an abortion, I'm off the hook. So they thought it really sponsored male irresponsibility, and they were right. Whatever the status of women in society, women have no right to kill their unborn children. And moreover, abortion undermines something that is distinctively female, motherhood, and often leaves a ravaged conscience in the women who get the abortions. And of course, the most important issue here is that there is another living human person involved, the unborn child, and the father, for that matter. So we don't allow or encourage abortion for the sake of women's rights. One other objection to the pro-life position is, it's a private religious issue. The state should be secular. Well, the founders of our country didn't mean the state to be secular. There would be no established religion, but there would be the freedom of religion, and religious people are free to advocate in politics. Religious citizens have the right to participate in civil government according to their basic worldview. And moreover, all law is based on some vision of morality, whether it's secular or religious, or depending on what religion exercises the influence. Now, lastly, let me deal with an argument that's very well known. It's by Judith Jarvis Thompson. It's called A Defense of Abortion. Unlike others, she concedes for the sake of argument that the human fetus is a person. And then she gives a kind of analogy or parable or thought experiment. She says, what if, against your will, you're connected to a violinist who will die without your support? The violinist is a person. He must be connected to you for 9 months in order to live. But Thompson says you have no moral obligation to stay connected to him, since you did not choose to be connected in the first place. You do not want to be connected to him, given the inconvenience to yourself. Therefore, you can disconnect him and let him die. This is supposed to be analogous to the situation where a woman experiences an unwanted pregnancy. Now, the parable is not analogous to unwanted pregnancies. For the first point, if a woman is pregnant, she doesn't have inside of her an alien entity who just happened to be there. This is her genetic offspring. This is her child, male or female, a living human being, I'd argue a person. So this is a relative. This is your offspring you're talking about. Moreover, this analogy would only apply to cases of rape, where pregnancy occurs totally against someone's will. If a woman consents to sex and she becomes pregnant and she didn't want to become pregnant, she still bears the moral responsibility for consenting to sex, which could have, and in this case did, lead to pregnancy. So if a woman has sex, gets pregnant, doesn't want the baby, that is not analogous to having someone hook you up against your will to someone who's unrelated to you. Moreover, we have to realize that we have unchosen obligations to human beings. So let's go back to this strange kind of analogy, parable, thought experiment that Thompson came up with. What if I go to bed tonight and I wake up in the morning and I find out that I'm connected to someone else and I have to be connected for 9 months or else that person will die? And let's say that person is Kenny G. and Kenny G has to play saxophone while he's connected to me during the 9 months. Now, I'm a jazz fan, and I don't like Kenny G's music, which is called smooth jazz, if it's jazz at all. But Kenny G is a living human being with objective moral value made in the image and likeness of God. So if I know that I must be his host, he must be connected to me for 9 months or else he will die, then I have the unchosen moral obligation to suffer in order for him to live. So some people have thought that this Thompson objection was just the killer objections, use kind of the pun there, the killer objection to a pro-life position. It isn't. So I think I've covered the main biblical arguments for the pro-life position, the main logical argument for the pro-life position. I've looked at a number of objections. Of course, we could go into more detail with all of these, but this really is the leading moral issue of our day. About 60 million fetuses have been legally killed since Roe v. Wade became legal in 1973. Now, thank God Roe v. Wade was finally overturned recently, but that simply puts it back to the states, and many states still have very liberal abortion laws. This is still a major issue for everyone. So I hope that those of you who are Christians will see the biblical force of the argument. And if you're not, you will see the logical, philosophical force of the argument that I gave, and that you will see that the arguments against the pro-life position ultimately fail. This is Doug Grotheis. You've been listening to Truth Tribe, where we try to seek the truth about important things through reason and evidence. If you'd like to know more about me and my ministry, please go to douglasgrotheis.com. And you can also go to the Denver Seminary webpage to look into my apologetics master's degree. That is denverseminary.edu. And please remember that I am very available for public speaking, for seminars, one-off talks, sermons, debates. And if you go to my webpage, you can see an essay where I talk about 10 or 11 different topics that I can speak on for your church or other group. Thank you for listening.
Truth Tribe is a production of Life Audio and Salem Media. If you liked what you heard today, please take a second to rate and review this podcast in your favorite podcast app so that more listeners like you can find the show. For more faith-filled, inspirational podcasts, visit us at lifeaudio.com.
This is my skyship, Dreamer. My cargo is stories, and our destination, dreams.
With Abide Sleep Stories for Kids, you can help your children fall asleep fast and learn about God. To find these kids' bedtime stories, go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Stories for Kids. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.